The consul walked through the hollow of Mena Gladstone, retrieved his glass, and went to pour another scotch.
"You have been chosen to join the pilgrimage to the Shrike,"
said the image of the old CEO, whom the press loved to compare to Lincoln or Churchill or Alvarez Temp, or whatever other pre-Hegira legend was in historical vogue at the time.
"The Templars are sending their tree ship, Yggdrasil,"
said Gladstone.
"And the evacuation task force commander has instructions to let it pass. With a 3-week time debt, you can rendezvous with the Yggdrasil before it goes quantum from the Parvati system. The 6 other pilgrims chosen by the Shrike Church will be aboard the tree ship. Our intelligence reports suggest that at least one of the 7 pilgrims is an agent of the Ousters. We do not, at this time, have any way of knowing which one it is."
The consul had to smile. Among all the other risks Gladstone was taking, the old woman had to consider the possibility that he was the spy and that she was fatlining crucial information to an Ouster agent. Or had she given him any crucial information? The fleet movements were detectable as soon as the ships used their Hawking drives. And if the consul were the spy, the CEO's revelation might be a way to scare him off. The consul's smile faded, and he drank his scotch.
"Saul Weintraub and Fedmon Kassad are among the 7 pilgrims chosen,"
said Gladstone. The consul's frown deepened. He stared at the cloud of digits flickering like dust motes around the old woman's image. 15 seconds of fatline transmission time remained.
"We need your help,"
said Mena Gladstone.
"It is essential that the secrets of the Time Tombs and the Shrike be uncovered. This pilgrimage may be our last chance. If the Ousters conquer Hyperion, their agent must be eliminated and the Time Tomb sealed at all cost. The fate of the hegemony may depend upon it."
The transmission ended, except for the pulse of rendezvous coordinates.
"Response?"
asked the ship's computer. Despite the tremendous energies involved, the spacecraft was capable of placing a brief, coded squirt into the incessant babble of FTL bursts, which tied the human portions of the galaxy together.
"No,"
said the consul, and went outside to lean on the balcony railing. Night had fallen, and the clouds were low. No stars were visible. The darkness would have been absolute, except for the intermittent flash of lightning to the north, and a soft phosphorescence rising from the marshes. The consul was suddenly very aware that he was, at that second, the only sentient being on an unnamed world. He listened to the antediluvian night sounds rising from the swamps, and he thought about morning, about setting out in the Vikan EMV at first light, about spending the day in sunshine, about hunting big game in the fern forests to the south, and then returning to the ship in the evening for a good steak and a cold beer. The consul thought about the sharp pleasure of the hunt and the equally sharp solace of solitude. Solitude he had earned through the pain and nightmare he had already suffered on Hyperion.
"Hyperion."
The consul went inside, brought the balcony in, and sealed the ship just as the first heavy raindrops began to fall. He climbed the spiral staircase to his sleeping cabin at the apex of the ship. The circular room was dark except for silent explosions of lightning, which outlined rivulets of rain coursing the skylight. The consul stripped, lay back on the firm mattress, and switched on the sound system and external audio pickups. He listened as the fury of the storm blended with the violence of Wagner's Flight of the Valkyries. Hurricane winds buffeted the ship. The sound of thunderclaps filled the room as the skylight flashed white, leaving afterimages burning in the consul's retinas.
Wagner is good only for thunderstorms,
he thought. He closed his eyes, but the lightning was visible through closed eyelids. He remembered the glint of ice crystals blowing through the tumbled ruins on the low hills near the time tombs, and the colder gleam of steel on the shrike's impossible tree of metal thorns. He remembered screams in the night and the hundred-facet, ruby-and-blood gaze of the shrike itself.
Hyperion.
The consul silently commanded the computer to shut off all speakers and raised his wrist to cover his eyes. In the sudden silence, he lay thinking about how insane it would be to return to Hyperion. During his 11 years as consul on that distant and enigmatic world, the mysterious Church of the Shrike had allowed a dozen barges of off-world pilgrims to depart for the windswept barrens around the time tombs, north of the mountains. No one had returned. And that had been in normal times, when the Shrike had been prisoner to the tides of time and forces no one understood, and the anti-entropic fields had been contained to a few dozen meters around the time tombs, and there had been no threat of an ouster invasion.